succession number 14788, Rule 11.
Mr. Parker, Rule 11. We're talking about some of your recreations at Majerta, PG-53, we think. Anything else you remember about your time there?
Well, the time we went down to bathe in the sea.
They let you out?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, one day someone said, we're going for a swim. I said, where? He said, the seaside. I said, you must be joking. Of course, the next day, two or three big trucks pulled up. And these, when I say big trucks, I mean they were big. These sort of Mack ones. I forget what they call them, but they were really towing their big guns. And you get about 100 blokes. And so away we went, and before we knew where we weren't very far from the sea. And we were out all day. And I mean, you say, do you think about escaping? Well, if you try to escape down there, you wouldn't know which way to go. If you're a good swimmer, you'd probably swim across the France. But I really enjoyed that. I mean, it's a real day out. It's like schoolboys.
Any other days out? Any other days out, or was that?
No, that was about it.
Did they ever? Were you asked to work at all?
Well,
at Majerta.
Oh no, not in. They pronounce it Majerata.
Sorry, I'll keep it Majerata. Yeah.
Yeah. And no. From there, this is another story. You see.
Just before we go on after that, how did you get on with the guards? The Italian guards.
Well, all right till one bloke got killed. I mean,
tell me what happened.
Well, now and again they used to check for. You remember we were talking about pitching these slats out of the. Well, they used to go around periodically and get everybody out on the playing field, and you weren't allowed back in any billets until evening time. So, obviously, I mean. People say, well, where do we make, go to the loo? Or, and this bloke said, well, I said, nip over the wire. I said, oh, will we be there? I said, you'll be all right.
And who said that, the guard or?
No, one of the prisoners, yeah. Like it might have been me, he said, it wasn't me, actually, but I was near the bloke, and he said to him, well, nip over the wire, you'll be all right. And it was just like, sorry to explain, but the big field, like say this is the big field, and that part there was set off, and there's wires going that way to the big wires on the outside. They were about probably 7 foot high, and there's like sort of strands of wire going up to them. And of course, he stepped over there to make water, and one of the guards just one shot killed him.
Did he warn him?
Just shouted, no, Joe, no, or no, whatever his name was. And that was it. He didn't sort of. Well, it happened in such a flash that the bloke was dead before we'd even saw him turn grey on the floor.
Now, that you didn't get on too well after that, you say, with them?
Well, that was probably, you know, an isolated incident, but. I think prisoners and warders, I mean, they got their job to do, and I suppose being liberal-minded, they didn't bother us, and we didn't bother them. But just that instance where bloke did get killed, then it caused a bit of friction for about 2 or 3 days, but it soon passed, you know.
Now, you had to move eventually in, I think, May 1943. That's when you moved to Garagna. I don't know how you pronounce these things. You said there's a story about the move from.
A bit hazy now. Where are we now? Yeah, well, were you talking about did you go to work in. Now, you could volunteer to go to work. I mean, you weren't forced to, but we were so sick of being inside the camp that I volunteered to go out to work. And this was on the rice fields. This place called the Banya, and that's on the Po in the north of Italy. We worked on the Rise Shores there, and that was really nice because we were working with girls. In the fields, we were trying to dodge work and not sort of put our sort of, what shall I say, not to help the Italians by working. So we used to mess about in the fields, sort of not work hard.
What were you actually working at? What did you do?
In the rice fields. Well, just coming on to that.
Sorry.
The bloke was in charge, he was what they call the padrone, which is a master in their language. And he thought, well, what I'll do, I'll split them up. He had girls in the field and prisoner of war. And of course, there was always we were always locking about and not doing the proper work. So what he did, he split them up, put a girl and a prisoner, a girl in a long line. And in the rice fields, it's a technical thing, but they have fields and canals where they open sluices and they put water on one field, water off another field. I don't know if you've seen on the telly or any like, but when you see the rice fields, they grow the rice in a small paddy and then they transplant it into bigger paddies. It's like in your garden, if you put all your seeds in, they come up and you have to, what's the name? You have to spread them out, don't you? Or thin them out. And that used to happen up in the rice fields. And of course when you're in the small fields, you used to have to take the little seedlings or the rice was just growing then, and take them into another big field. And our job was standing in water up to about sort of just above ankle depth, and you start to plant them under the water like that.
Just push them in?
Yeah.
The roots?
Yeah.
And that was all you did?
Yeah. Is that all you did?
Was it hard work then?
Well, it was hard work for us because we weren't used to it. And, of course, the girls, they were used to it because what happened in England, they're the Land Army girls, didn't they? Well, over there, all the typists and people in offices used to have to do 6 months on the rice fields. Or 3 months, about sort of 3 months. 3 months were in the office. And of course, we got all the girls doing that, and while they were working, because they got to do the work, cause, I mean, we were prisoner of war, we weren't, couldn't care less. If they shot us, well, that was it, the end of it. And I enjoyed that because you got plenty of sunshine and you get extra food that was brought up to the fields.
Was it better when they got you alternate with women? Did that make you do more work?
Oh, I did. Because you didn't want to lose face. I mean, if women can do it, I mean, why can't men do it? That sort of thing, you know. It was psychology.
And it worked?
Yeah.
And where were you staying when you were at Cabangli?
In little, Nissanots, that kind of thing.
And you got more food? Extra food would you get?
Better rations than the main camps, yeah.
Now, you were there from anything else about your time there?
I don't think so, no.
And you moved from there in July 43 to Gassino. And you were there till September when the armistice happened. What do you remember about Gassino?
Well, I was in working on a canal then between Turin and Milan.
Would that be on your list? That's where it says Gassino. Would that be it? I pronounce it, it's Gassineau. Gassineau. And that's where you were based.
That's it.
What were you doing working on the canal before we come to the actual armistice?
Well, just digging it out, like you dig a canal out.
Was that hard work?
It was, yeah. Some of these jobs, I mean, you could make hard work, and provided you sort of satisfied the old guard that you were doing your job, I mean, they weren't worried. I mean, as long as you weren't trying to escape all the time. Used to have a couple of lads come to see me, you know, Italian lads, and used to parlour with them, used to pick up a bit of Italian. I always remember talking about the armistice.
Well, let's come on to the armistice then. Yeah. Did you know it was coming? Did you have any idea?
These two young lads, they used to come down every day, and in the end we were sort of on nodding terms and then speaking terms. And one was Georgia and I was Alberto. He came down one day and says, "Alberto." I looked at him. The old guard says, okay, he did talk to him. He says, "The war's over." He says, "La guerra finita." I said, "Sure." Certo. Certainly. They were coming down and sort of saying, comrades, kind of thing. "Alberto, the war's over. You'll be back home tomorrow, you know." And the guy said to himself, like, "Well, better go and sort this out." And they said, "You know, get all your kids together and go back to camp." And this is the best camp I'd ever been in.
The casino?
Yeah.
What was so good about it?
Well, it was built on German lines, and the hygiene was better, the food was better, the air was better. It was like going into a new town, you know, sort of.
So you went back with the guards, and what happened?
Well, I think at that time they'd strung up Mussolini. That's why they capitulated. And they grabbed all their kit and they scarpered. They left the camp, locked the doors and threw away the key. We were inside. So the first thing is we had a meeting. We said, "Well, we'll open the canteen for the lads and we'll make merry." And for 3 days we were jugging up and plenty of booze and plenty of eats, and we thought the war was over. So we'd get a boat up the I don't know which part we'd be in then.
Now, did you think the Germans had surrendered as well? Or,
well, it's difficult to piece these things together, because when they said the war was over, we'd got no newspapers, so we couldn't pick up a newspaper and read it. But we knew something was going on, because the guards decided to lock the gates and throw away the key, so they left us together. Get on with it.
So what happened next?
What happened next?
Is this when you escaped?
That's right. That's right. I was just trying to work that out. There was five of us there. There was myself, one Italian lad, he came with us, and there was two Taffies, myself. There's about five altogether, and one of them was the Italian lad. And round Turin is fairly hilly, we went in the hills.
And how did you escape? You just
walked out. Climbed over the gates and that was it.
So you were going up into the hills. Why do that?
Well, by the third day, we'd heard firing, and you get news by the grapevine that the Germans were coming through, and they were coming through into it to take over Italy. So we went up in the hills, sort of away from the Germans.
What do you remember about that time up in the hills?
It was quite good, that was.
Yeah. In what way?
Well, we found an old farmhouse up in the hills and been left, because when the war started with them, they obviously either been called up or left, and this old farmhouse was just left derelict, and we took it over. And then the people in the valley, like everything else, I mean, it's by a grapevine. They got to know there was some prisoner of war on the loose up in the hills, and they came up and they used to bring us food every day. So we got food from every people. We got about 5 contacts. One day they'd say, "Alberto," he used to bring what they call grassini, they're long sticks of bread, and he'd bring grapes, and we had our own on the old farm we took over. It was a vinery. And that was flooded with bunches of grapes. We sit underneath there, pulling a bunch of grapes down. conditions were, well, to us, I mean, you didn't worry about being captain. All you were worried about was today.
Did you have any plan of what you were doing, or were you just staying there?
No, we didn't know what. We knew we was in Italy. We knew we was in the north. We were near Turin, but as regards sort of getting away, or where the front line was, or we didn't, front line was there.
So you were up there having a good time. What happened next?
Well, we same as I say, we was getting food from everywhere. I mean, people in the valley were very good to us, and they used to send the children up to bring us food. And every day it was sort of one big happy party. We found 2 or 3 casks of wine, and they were jugging up. And
so you were there quite a while, weren't you?
Oh, yes.
From September through to January?
But not in the same place.
So what were you doing then?
From there... I caught malaria from the rice fields, and quite a few lads had got malaria. And one of the lads in the town, he said, "I'll take you and get you a doctor." And he took me. I always remember it in like a surrey, you know, with a spring on the top and the old horse there. And took me to the town, Turin. And he got me a doctor. And he was an Italian doctor who was in league with the partisans. And although he was a doctor and lived in Turin, he'd got sort of business interests in the south. So he was always travelling north and south. And he said to me, "Have you heard from your people?" I said, "Well, being a prisoner of war," I said, "we get occasional letters, but now I'm on the loose," I said, "can't get any letters through at all." So I said, "Oh, deal with me." And he got a letter through to my father in Nottingham.
I hadn't mentioned that, but when did your parents first find out what had happened to you? I mean, how did they find out where you were? Or were they told you were missing or killed? Or
from home? Oh, yes, I had a telegram saying, first of all, you're missing, presumed dead, because of with the Battle of Nice, between everything was chaos. And then eventually you sign a bit of paper, that goes through to the Red Cross, and I suppose that goes back to wherever. And then they got another telegram saying that missing prisoner of war. I think the first letter I got was, I've got one at home somewhere from a girlfriend. Well, no, it was in Germany, no.
So it took a while?
Yeah. Mm.
So what happened next then? You were saying this, you went with this doctor?
Oh, yeah, well, this doctor took me to, the lad who brought me on the carriage from Gassino, he took me to his auntie, and I stayed with them for right up till they got recaptured to Germany.
So where were you staying?
In the house.
In
Turin.
And what was life like there?
Oh, I'd got my own maid and my own whiskey and my beer, the tea. The lady that I stayed with, she'd got three shoe shops. I used to go down 2 or 3 days a week learning to shoe shoes. That was quite an ideal thing.
Did you have to watch out for, fascist supporters amongst the Italians?
We did.
And did you know of any?
I did eventually when they caught me.
Right, so until then you hadn't seen it. How long were you in this house, you reckon?
Well, I was with this lady from September until January. And then...
So you weren't in the hills long?
Oh, no. I think probably 3 weeks. Because when I got this malaria, I came down.
And then you just lived in the house normally?
Yeah. Used to go out on the tram. And the lady used to let me her pass on the tram. And he could sit beside of a German on the tram. And he wouldn't understand English, so you could talk away in Italian. And this friend, the nephew of the auntie, who's called her auntie, she said, well, you take my card and you just go on the old tram, go down to the shop in the town. The place where it was, a place called Covereto. If you look on the map, you'll find that, because there's a film made about a mini, and it was stationed all around Covereto. And I was at the terminus, right at the terminus of Covereto from Turin. So when I got this pass, I used to get on the tram, just show it and walk straight on, sit down. I used to chat away there on the old tram in English or French or this young bloke that I was with, the auntie's nephew, he could speak German, Italian, French, about 4 languages. So you take an ordinary soldier, he wouldn't know that we were talking Siberian or whatever. So on the tram he'd say, Alberto, so. And he talked to me in Italian, and he answered somebody else in French, and of course the old Germans, but they could care less. The ordinary soldier, like. Do you speak French? So we could speak French to each other, and look outside wouldn't know what we're talking about, would they?
So what happened next then? You stayed there for all that time.
Yeah.
And then how did it come to an end?
Well, Italy, they have what they call Saints Day. It's a long story, but
it's all right. You tell it detail.
Incidentally, that's the ring of my friend in Italy, Lina Sacco. Her name is Carolina, and her Saints Day, they always have a bit of a party. And I always remember it was on a Friday, and she says, come down to the shop and we'll go for a meal after closing time. And about half an hour before closing time, I was the shop down below, and there was a little staircase, and at the top was a little bar with coffee and where they made the tea and stuff like that. And two Germans, well, there was four Germans altogether, there was two in service and two uniform, and they came up and must have been tipped off and said, Inglese, Englander, in German. And I said, no, I said, I'm sono Italiano. Oh, one bloke rattled off in, he was in German, but he rattled off in Italian, and he said, no, you're English.
You couldn't understand him when he spoke fast.
No.
How much Italian did you know?
Well, a fair bit to get by, but I mean, once you start doing it, if you're talking about something you don't know what someone else is talking about, if you can follow, if you're talking like now and you're following me and I'm following you, you can pick it up quite. But suddenly you break off and say, "Where's that so-and-so coming from?" Another track altogether, you're lost, you see. And I finished up in the old civil jail then, San Paolo jail.
They arrested you then?
Yeah.
How did they treat the woman?
Sentenced her to life imprisonment. Sentenced her to death first, because she was helping prisoners.
And what was her name again?
Socco. She's dead now, mind you, but she finished up in a place called Ravensbrook.
Which is about how old was she then?
55-ish.
No. So how did you feel? I mean, did you feel responsible that she'd been
arrested?
Oh,
yeah. Because, I mean, there's no sort of saying, well, we were sort of pressured into it or something like that. I mean, she was definitely... She'd got a Jew in there as well, a Romanian Jew, and me. And looking out, so I mean, twice she'd sort of been...
They arrested him as well.
Yeah, he's fine to death.
So what happened to you then, when you were arrested?
Well, they put me in this civil jail, and
that's in Turin.
In Turin, yeah, San Paolo, I think it was.
It's January the 15th. You were arrested, I think, and that's 1944.
44, yeah.
And how did they treat you in the jail?
Well, they used to interrogate me every day, trying to find out why and when, who'd looked after me. And at that particular time, there's a lot of New Zealanders that got behind the lines and doing a lot of sabotage. Of course, they were trying to find out whether I was one of those, see. But they kept saying to me, "What's your number?" 2781711. "What's so and so? What's your regimen?" We're not supposed to tell her. So I said, you can tell us because we know where you come from and so and so. So I said, "Well, all we're supposed to tell you is our number." I said, "That's it." And they kept, for about 5 days, he used to fetch me down from the cell and interrogate me and say, "What's your name?" "Albert Parker." "Yeah. What's your number?" 878086. "What's your regimen?" "I'm not supposed to tell you that." He's gone and on every day. Yeah.
Did they threaten you at all?
Not as such, no. Did later on, but no. Not as such, no.
And you wouldn't tell them your regimen?
No.
Couldn't they have told from your cap badge? Or I should have asked, were you in uniform when you
were? Civvies.
Where did you got your civvies from?
Well, from the Italian people that brought the food and, you know.
So you weren't, when you were being interrogated, you were in civilian uniform?
Oh, so, yeah. So I could have been shot, you see.
So what happened then? The 5 days...
Interrogation, yeah. And then I suppose they wanted to send us to a proper camp.